is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get you up to date with some headlines. Well, Matt Barkley looks like he's going to be the backup quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. He signs a deal with the Cincinnati Bengals. He just tweeted that out. Big story of the morning, New York Jets trading up from 6-3. They gave up number two pick next year, so three twos, so they can try to get the quarterback we'll see what the Giants do next, because the Giants are sitting there at two with Eli Manning. If they don't take Josh Rosen, then they'll probably try to see if they can work out some kind of deal with the Buffalo Bills. So we got activity going there. Seahawks made three moves yesterday, but they lose one big one. Sheldon Richardson going over to the Minnesota Vikings on a one-year deal at $8 million. But they did sign Ed Dixon at tight end. They've got Jaron Brown, a wide receiver, caught over 30 passes with the Arizona Cardinals. They got Maurice Alexander, a strong safety, with the third signing. So they've been very active. But again, this has just been crazy. We got Michael Crabtree signing a three-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens after being cut by the Oakland Raiders. Raiders have been very active. You know, they were able to get Jordy Nelson done yesterday. And Ndamukong Suh is visiting New Orleans Saints. He's still in the mix. Terrell Pryor is coming in tomorrow for a visit with Seattle. So lots of free agent moves. We'll keep you up to date on all of those. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us now from SeattlePI.com is Michael Sean Duggar. And Michael, this has been crazy, but how do you kind of sum up what direction the Seahawks are going in free agency?
Well, the key word that they're, I guess, to describe the direction would be inexpensive, right? I mean, anyone who meets with the Seahawks and then signs elsewhere, you see them with accepting a deal that it looks like the Seahawks weren't offering. You know, that just seems to be the theme here. Let's get, not even necessarily get younger, you know, because, I mean, what is Ed Dixon's, what, 30? I mean, it looks 30, like yeah. they've clearly set, like, a baseline. Like, here's how much we won't spend on you, you know, whether that's Richard Sherman or whether that's who just came in, Austin Strange Jenkins, you know, just no matter who it is, it's just, hey, look, this is Sheldon Richardson. This is how much you want to pay. What are you going to do about it? And it looks like most guys are taking the money elsewhere. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad strategy, because, I mean, if you think about it, when you're not in that first wave of guys where you're grabbing, like, you know, a Cousins or, you know, just the big names that are out there, then, yeah, overpaying for the second-tier guys isn't the way to go. Especially, that's not the way the Seahawks are going to do it at all.
Mm-hmm. No, it looks like, because they're making strategic choices. Like, for example, you'd get younger was Austin Seferian Jenkins, but he didn't want to go above $3.6 million. And then, I don't know, do you believe that they only offered about $6.5 million on Sheldon Richardson and he takes $8 million from the Minnesota Vikings?
The Sheldon deal surprised me. I'm really curious as to what they threw out there, because, yeah, $6 million would seem like almost like a disrespectful lowball for someone of Sheldon's caliber, right? Because it's like,
all right,
they want to get younger, right? But you can't just want to get younger and not pay the young guys. Like, the young guys want to get paid too. You know, they recognize that there are teams who want to get younger and they're in their prime. And, you know, it's like, if I'm 27 and I'm hot commodity, yeah, you got to pay me. So it was surprising to see that, yeah, he took just a one-year deal for the $8 million. I wouldn't be surprising if they lowballed him like that. But, I mean, it would fit the theme, but yeah, that was definitely a bit of a shock to see that number. I can see why Sheldon was comfortable just getting wined and dined in Minnesota for a couple days.
Oh yeah, and that one probably surprised me more than anything else, because, I mean, that's a pretty good bargain, because, I mean, you know, he was wrong in asking for 15, but you can see it justified. I mean, when you have Marcel Darius and Muhammad Wilkerson, I mean, them getting those type of $15-16 million deals, it's like, you can ask for it because you can justify it. You may not get it, and he didn't get it, and so he had to take the prove it type of deal to stay and to get something with Minnesota.
And you know, the other surprising part about, you know, letting Sheldon kind of walk for a deal that doesn't seem that expensive is, remember why they got Sheldon? Is because, okay, Malik McDowell's injured. We don't know if he's going to play. Let's get, you know, someone else. I mean, that's still the case. You know, all these months later, they still don't know. They don't know if Malik McDowell's going to play. They don't know how healthy he is. They keep not having updates. So you would think the reason you got him in the first place, you know, that the necessity is still there, you know? Like, you still have that need, you have that uncertainty with Malik. So to not pay for his fill-in again, that's even the more surprising part about that, because you still need a defensive tackle.
Right, agreed. Although, again, you know, again, they still have Nazir Jones and they still have Jaron Reed. I mean, they need more of a pass rush on the outside because they don't have Michael Bennett and they're not expected to have Cliff Averill. I mean, they have, I don't know. How did you read the Barkevius Mingo signing?
That was interesting, too. Well, the first thing I thought of when I was just kind of getting my background on him, I was like, oh, another guy from that 2013 draft. I mean, the Seahawks love that 2013 draft, even if it's not seeming like most of those guys are panning out. It seems like there's a reason a lot of them are, you know, available. And I guess they love everyone in that draft except Sheldon, right?
Right.
I think he'll be a maybe outside rusher type, use sparingly, not expected to, you know, commit or play a lot right away, or just not play a lot of snaps. I don't think it'll be like they're a big splashy move, or I guess it's not a big splashy move. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I didn't think too much of it. I thought the biggest move that they made was getting Bradley McDougal back. I mean, that's...
Yes.
Like, the reason you got him, obviously last year, remember, they get him, cause like, okay, Earl got hurt, Cam got banged up, let's go get some insurance for those guys in case something happened to Cam, and they had insurance. You know, they needed that same insurance for Cam now. You know, it's the same thing with Sheldon. Like, okay, we got Sheldon as insurance, so I thought they'd keep him. They got Bradley as insurance, so they kept him. I think that move was probably the biggest and most important thus far in terms of guys they gave some money to.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, Richard Sherman took some shots at Pete and took some shots at the team and that management when he was on the other day. And I thought the interesting part is that he was saying that Pete Carroll wants to try to get more of the younger guys in there. Yet, yesterday, they end up, because it was great getting McDougal back. They still have Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson, yet they signed, my guess is probably a minimum deal, not much, for Maurice Alexander to maybe be a backup strong safety. But I think what that does, it enhances the possibility of them trading Earl Thomas, because, you know, if you have McDougal, you have Earl Thomas, and you have another veteran out there, where's the playing time for Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson?
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned Richard Sherman taking a shot at management. If you're referring to that, him on that podcast, that was fascinating. I don't know if you already talked about it, but like, I thought one of the interesting things that Sherman threw out there, one of his theories, I mean, half of it sounded like he was salty. Got to throw that out there. But there was a good portion of it where he mentions how Pete still kind of has that college mindset in that he likes to reload with guys. And I think there's kind of something to that in the sense that he is like the ultimate competitor. So I think that it's not more like a college mindset. It's like that competitive in that, okay, I won with this core, you know, I'm competitive. Let's see if I can reload with another core and do it again. Like, you know, coaches like challenge themselves. They take on challenges in that way. I think that was really one of the more interesting parts of like Sherman's 10 minutes of hot takes on that Tomahawk podcast, other than the parts where he was, you know, clearly said he felt disrespected by getting cut, and I can't blame him. Getting fired sucks.
No. That's understandable because, I mean, again, it's like you're a proud guy. You expect that you're going to be with the organization for a long period of time, and then, boom, here it comes down. You get the injury, and now you're a 49er. So it's like, okay, that's the reality of things. But, no player likes to get cut. And so you can see the rivalry between the 49ers and Seahawks are just really going to enhance because he's not going to stop talking.
Oh, no, absolutely. And then, I didn't think about this until he tweeted it. I mean, yeah, he had played every game. One freak injury, bang, he's gone from the team. I mean, that,
right.
When you look at it that way, like from his view, that hurts. It's almost like, hey, I was here for you guys, like all the time. And the one time I needed you guys to kind of just trust me real quick, it was, nope, showed me the door and lowballed me, apparently. So, I mean, I'm 100% here for the Richard Sherman like vengeance tour. I'm all for it because he's not a dirty player, right? So I know he's not going to do anything malicious, but he's definitely going to go out there and try to dominate and stick it to the team that fired him. And I like it, you know, bring the heat.
Yeah. Well, what I'm also wondering about too, if indeed this team is, it's obviously retooling. I think we it's safe to say that. If you know, if there's a concern, it's like, okay, you have a whole bunch of guys that are, you know, thinking Super Bowl that may not have wanted to stay here. I'm wondering if that the thought came in.
That's interesting too. And yeah, retool, I think, is the right word. I think everyone wants to use rebuild, but for me, when I think rebuild, I think of like a change in philosophy. Really, I think of like, okay, we want to change is how we do things as opposed to just who we're doing it with. Like, I still think they're going to play the same defense. I still think they're going to, you know, emphasis on running the ball. You know, special teams are going to be really important. Like, guys who want to make the team are still going to need to be good special teams players. They still want versatile linemen. Like, all those things are still the same. So, yeah, the retool there, that's probably the best word to use there. And I also think the goal is still, you know, to get to a championship. I think once you have a franchise guy, every year that he's healthy, you have to try to go get a championship, especially if you know he can get you there. So, I don't know that's not really what you were going for just there. But I think that's important for, like, the fans to hear. Like, retool, it's not a full-on rebuild, right? The coach is still there. His philosophies are there. Russell Wilson's still there. Like, it's still going to be the Seahawks. It's just, you know, with different, you know, different players in the game.
Well, here's the one thing I'm wondering about. That's because I'm anticipating that they must be thinking that they're going to lose more of their unrestricted free agents, because here they've already signed three guys, unrestricted free agents, and so that to get the compensatory picks, because right now they qualify for either a 3 or a 4 on Jimmy Graham and 2 4s on the Richardsons, Paul and Sheldon. It's like, I can't imagine them wanting to give them away when they're such good picks, but you know, the more unrestricted they sign, that tells me the more they think they're going to lose.
You're right about that. Dude, the comp picks, it's funny. Comp picks, it's funny how people look at it. Some people are like, ah, man, I don't want no comp pick for 2019. I want to win it all right now. But I think the factoring those in and thinking about the formula, which is super complicated. I know you have a good handle on it, but it's super frustrating to try to figure out. Like, that's factoring into a lot of their decisions on why they're not, you know, like why they're letting this guy walk and why they'll not bring this guy in, or while they will bring this guy in. That part of it was really interesting, of who they like let walk and let in the guys they're trying to sign in their place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the more they sign, the more they can lose. And I mean, right now they're on the books to get these guys, but do they really want to lose the chance to get the picks? You know, again, you want the best players possible, but you know, these are role players that they're signing for the most part. They're not, you know, core group type of guys. But yeah, it's like, I just wonder how many of these are they going to sign.
Well, and also I think with how they're playing free agency is really just putting more of an emphasis on the draft. You know, like, I mean, you mm-hmm. could go out and you could probably get a Jordy Nelson, you know, at 30 plus, and he'll probably be productive for you. Or you can, you know, trust the draft you just had and groom some receivers, or know that there's some guys who can give you a production, like, relative to their pay, you know, in the draft. If you think you can get a third round pick, you can combine a third round pick and Jaren Brown to give you the same, you know, type of production you were going to get for someone who maybe like would overpay for Crabtree or Jordy Nelson, then yeah, stick with the draft. I mean, that's been how Pete and John have been successful. I can't see why they want to, you know, stray away from that.
Mm-hmm. No question. But it's just been fascinating because, again, we just never anticipated it was going to be this change to this effect. I mean, what? There's only like, if you don't count Cam Chancellor and don't count Cliff Avril, now you're looking at what is effectively only 6 players left in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, it is really crazy to kind of, you know, drive by CenturyLink like I did, I think, a few months ago, and just look at all the posters, all the big name guys who just aren't going to be there. You know, all the faces, you know, the faces on the walls, the big name guys. Like, to there be a defense in Seattle without Richard Sherman? Let's say if they don't have Cam, they don't have Michael Bennett. I mean, even if they still have Earl, like I can see why some people are kind of hitting the panic button, because you are, and Richard Sherman made this point too, you're giving up guys, you know, a Hall of Fame talent, you know,
right.
for unproven guys. You know, that is a hard sell for a lot of people to say, okay, let's trade Earl Thomas because we can get like a first round pick or like, and like a third round pick. And some people are like, I don't want a guy with potential. I know what Earl can do. Let's just keep Earl. Or, you know, I don't want a fifth round pick. I know what Michael Bennett can do. Let's just keep Michael Bennett. Like, I get that point of view. And then it is a hard sell because, I mean, even with trading Earl, like Earl's what, 28, 29? Still probably mm-hmm. one of the best 29, 29. In the league. Like, trading him, trading him is like, it's a hard sell for some people to think, okay, this first round pick we get might be good, or this third round pick we get might be good, as if Earl's not still one of the best defensive players in the league. Like, I get it. That's a tough pill to swallow, and it's hard to sell in March. But good thing to see him does the start for a while.
Yeah, but I'm kind of getting the feeling, I mean, the more you see the fact that, you know, they have McDougal back and they, you know, Maurice Alexander they got and, you know, they still have the two draft choices from last year. That's five safeties. Something's got to go.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and
the writing is on the wall.
What do you think they would take, what the lowest thing they would take for Earl Thomas?
That's a really great question, and I was thinking about that this morning after I saw the Jets trade. I was thinking about trade. I'm not sure what the lowest. I mean, I know they want to get in the second and third round, right?
Right.
So maybe if someone
right.
comes with a two and a three, I guess that's not really that low for someone like Earl Thomas. I would say you would at least need to come with the second. Maybe if someone comes with like a second and a fourth, or a second and another fifth, another. They're full on fifths right now. I'd say that might be something
right.
like the lowest they get. I know they at least want two picks for Earl. Yeah, Earl's not old, and Earl's
no,
not
exactly.
going down. So I think that's kind of in the budget there. Maybe a second and like a fifth, maybe the lowest there.
Oh, that's a fascinating time. Michael Sean Duggar, of course, read him on SeattlePI.com, and of course, what do you got on the podcast?
We just dropped our draft actually podcast with we had Rob Rang on there talking draft. He gave some really good insight, you know, on the running back class. That's another position that the Seahawks have kind of been quiet on, other than a few visits. The O-line class, you know, everyone loves Shaquem Griffin, his possibility of coming to Seattle. Yeah, Seahawks man to man. That one just came out, I think, a couple days ago. Yeah, I loved it. 30 minutes of Rob Rang talking draft. What more could you ask for in off season?
Gotta love that. Good stuff. Hey, Michael Sean, thanks for joining us.
Always. Thanks for having me, John. Have a good one.
All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. See what your reactions are to the way things are going on the Seahawks and the rest of free agency. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Idaho. Hey, Bob.
John, Pete Carroll has three rules. I'm going to talk about two of them. The first one is protect the team. The second one is no whining, no complaining, no excuses. Since the Super Bowl, our all-pros have thrown the team under the bus, in my view. First one is Marshawn Lynch, and we all know that story. The second was who ripped the season contract extension when he was sequenced to have one, and he knew that. Michael Bennett last year deciding that his message was more important than the team, and I'm not arguing about it, but for people to try to think that he didn't damage the team with his behavior last year, I think they're wrong. Richard Sherman has clearly demonstrated in the last few days that he was a destructive force inside the locker room, and his comments about Pete Carroll I found reprehensible and immature. Earl Thomas is the last one. Ray Roberts, one of your great guests that I hope you'd have more often, pointed out, you know, you just don't do what Thomas did and run into a closing locker room and make the comments he did. So we are where we are, but a lot of the failure is because we've had a group of players that lost track of Pete Carroll's rule number one, protect the team. And mm-hmm. I realize what's going on. I hope a lot of people like me are not happy but I think it's the house cleaning that was badly overdue, because you imagine when the rookies has been out on the practice field thinking Sherman's doing him a great job by showing him the ropes. We all know how well Sherman did in that role, but that sits in a team meeting and goes, oh, here comes Cumbia again. And whatever, I know you're a big fan of Richard Sherman. I am not, given his behavior the last few weeks. He's immature. He thinks he's far smarter than he is. And I guess my rejoinder is, Richard, if you're so smart, why can Jim Moore beat you in a public debate?
Nice. Okay, thank you, Bob. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Menke. Irish Menke, how are you?
Well, hello, Mr. Clayton. Wow, that last caller kind of nailed the whole thing. You know, Mr. Clayton, I think the teams, after that play call in the last Super Bowl, I think that that was when the teams began to fall apart. I think it just, you know, it just was so painful, and morale just went out the window. Rule number one, if that's the case with Pete Carroll, that went out the window too. I'm surprised it took as long as it did, like that man just said, for the team to reorganize. You know, I don't think after that game they stood a chance of ever getting back to where they were as a team and fighting together to get to that Super Bowl. You know, the play just started to go downhill fast.
Yeah.
But Mr. Clayton, we're talking about something special today. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And that's right. It is St. Patrick's Day. I almost forgot about that.
Mr. Clayton, you have a chance right now. It comes around once a year. It's time for you to start going Irish with me, Mr. Clayton.
I think it's a good chance it's going to probably pass on that.
Come on, Mr. Clayton. It's a once. Well, I won't say it's a once. My God.
Did they get eliminated from did they get into the NCAA tournament?
What?
Did they get into the NCAA tournament?
No, they didn't. It was, regrettably, no. They had they broke down and fell apart. They lost their two-star players to injuries. The Notre Dame Invitational Tournament right now is playing well. Who knows? They may win that because their star players are back in the game. They were playing with one hand tied behind their back all year due to injuries. It just was a bad year, Mr. Clayton. But anyway.
Yep.
Anyway, you have a great day today. And remember, save your soul, come to Jesus, go on.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Drew in Seattle. Hey, Drew.
Hey, good morning, Jay Clay. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Hey, doing all right. I guess I got kind of a problem with a lot of people saying the Seahawks should have started rebuilding earlier. Like, did you know that you were going to lose George Fant, Cliff Averill, Cam Chancellor, and Richard Sherman to season-ending injuries? You had a great team coming into the season, coming into training camp. I think that's some
right
hindsight.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't buy that idea because, again, what I looked at, and I didn't say it was the best team since 2013, but I did say it was the deepest team because it had more guys with starting experience than they had in 14, 15, and 16. So I thought that they had done a good job as far as, you know, getting more depth. You know, they had guys that had 15 Pro Bowl trips, or, you know, 15 guys that have been to the Pro Bowl. And so there was quality, but injuries played a part, bad play played a part, and, you know, some of the age played a part. I mean, it just started to, you could see the shrinkage. But again, as far as on paper, it looked good.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Thank you, Mr. Clayton.
So now I agree with you that, okay, hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. You know, your thoughts on how this offseason is going so far and how fast it's going. Because, you know, what you're looking at is that, you know, good portion of the free agent, because normally there's going to be about 160, 170 guys that are going to sign, and, you know, 94 have already moved to different teams, and, you know, a good portion of that list of 417 are already gone. And so now it's going to be that much tougher to try to pull out and get some, you know, really quality players. I mean, there's still good players out there. That's one thing we know for sure. But, you know, the list is dried up pretty fast. So your reaction to the way it's going, and also to saying goodbye to a lot of the guys that have been so good to this team and so part of this team for some time. I mean, now it looks like they're searching for a whole new core group of players. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, that's I guess the biggest surprise of all, that, you know, you knew there was going to be some change, and now you still wonder if it's going to be even more change, because you do think there is a possibility that they may just not a bargain basement sale, but may trade Earl Thomas. So that's of course in the mix right now. And, you know, get your thoughts on that, your thoughts on the whole free agency as it's going. I mean, it has been wild, it's been fast, it's been furious. And so it's one where, you know, what's going to be next? Because now today we had the big trade, trade in the sense that the Seahawks, well, not the Seahawks, but the Jets are now sitting with the third pick in the draft. They moved up three spots. They are looking, obviously, to get a quarterback in this draft, and they got themselves in a better position, and it cost them three number two picks. I mean, basically, you know, that's giving up three starters. You know, the value that they got for Sheldon Richardson is now sitting in Indianapolis because of that trade. The second-round pick that was a good pick in the second round. I mean, that's giving up a lot of quality now to get the quarterback, and they better be right on what quarterback they get, because the last two quarterbacks they've drafted have not been right. I mean, Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg just sit around doing nothing. And so, you know, no value there. So what's your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on how this is going this off season, as far as just, you know, some of the other teams around there, you know, some of the moves that have happened as far as the 49ers. Thought it was very curious that they went out and got Weston Richburg. Richburg was a guy that was a good center from that 2014 draft, and they basically, you know, wiped out Daniel Kilgore, who you know, accepted a four-year deal to stay there. Next thing you know, boom, he's shipped off to Atlanta for just a swap of picks. So thoughts on the 49ers, thoughts on the Seahawks, thoughts on all that. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines, and let's go to Tom in Everett. Hey, Tom.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Just some thoughts on the offseason. I mean, I'm not upset at the Seahawks for trying to reload some players. I think what most people have heartache over, it's kind of all happening at the same time. You know, you get rid of Sherman and Bennett, and then, you know, with Averill and Cam down with injuries, and then you let Graham go, who caught 10 touchdowns. You know, he helped win some games last year. You know, Shedd and Lane gone. It's all happening, this huge thing at one time, rather than just one or two players.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, it's tearing things down. There's no question about it. I mean, again, that's where I think you know, we didn't expect it this much, and you look and you see even more coming, because again, there's still guys like Byron Maxwell and Luke Wilson, and you're kind of pessimistic whether they're going to be able to come back. That's, I think, the biggest surprise of all.
I feel like maybe this is all going to happen again in another 3 or 4 years, since we have such a big turnover. It's just going to happen again 3 or 4 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because again, it's like because now, you know, the parts, you know, because, you know, the core, like, so much of the core group is now gone. Again, where there's only six players left from 2013, if you don't include Cliff Averill and Cam Chancellor, and it's hard to include them because you don't know if there's a chance they're going to be able to come back. And so, and of course, you know, you figure that, you know that Averill's in a real tough situation, but the fact that they've now brought McDougal back and they signed Maurice Alexander at safety, that he's not going to be back. But yeah, it's like, you knew something was coming, but you didn't think it was going to come this quick and this powerful.
Yeah. Thanks for your time, John.
Okay, Tom. Hey, thank you very much. Yeah, so I don't know. Was the thought around, it's like you knew there was going to be a bunch of change, but, you know, half of your Pro Bowl players on defense are now gone. And then, of course, it's like when you find out that the numbers on Richardson really weren't steep. I mean, 1 year at $8 million seems to be pretty reasonable. I mean, it's a pay cut from what he made last year. So that, I think caught everybody by surprise that it was going to be that low of a number. And, you know, he ended up making the choice not to come back. You know, he's making the idea. It's like, okay, I'm a better chance to go to a Super Bowl in Minnesota than Seattle. That, I think, is another big surprise. So I'm going to get your reaction and also maybe your continued reaction to comments that were made the other day by Richard Sherman, you know, kind of saying that the team has lost its way, which I think probably is a little unfair. It's a matter of trying to reload, I mean, fitting everything in there. And you knew it was going to be a puzzle. But right now, is it going in the right direction? Do you like some of the moves, some of the signings that they've made? Do you like the idea that they added a 30-some-year-old tight end? Do you like the idea that, now they're at least bringing Terrell Pryor in for a visit? That'll be tomorrow. Do you like that? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Cole in Seattle. Hey, Cole. Cole, are you there?
Hello?
Cole? Yes, you're on the air.
I'm sorry. My name's Paul, but that's okay.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. It's Paul. Paul, sorry about
that. That's fine. Hi, John. I'm calling about the Browns, and I wanted to get some of your feedback on what some of the moves they've made this offseason so far and what you think about it.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty decent because I think that some of these moves have been pretty smart. I mean, because, again, you know, you can see a little bit of a plan, and I think it starts to shape what they're doing in the draft. All right, so first they get the bridge quarterback in Tyrod Taylor. So that tells me that they're probably taking a quarterback that's going to take a little bit longer and so to get in there and have a stronger arm. So I think that puts them into Baker Mayfield number one or Josh Allen number two. Okay, so I like that because now you can have Taylor buy as much time as possible. That's one that I like there. The second one is getting Carlos Hyde at running back because it put him in a position where if they would have done the thing where they would take a running back first and Barkley at the expense of a quarterback. I mean, this is the Browns. Get the best quarterback. I mean, that's what's been holding this franchise up since it's gotten the expansion team.
I mean, I guess for me, I'd rather see Rosen or actually Rosen first and then maybe the kid from USC second. He's escaping my name right now. Darnold, to be honest.
Yeah, you're talking about Sam Darnold. See, I think they would take Sam Darnold first, and then I think they would take, the second quarterback then would be Josh Allen, because I think that they're going to be enamored with the arm strength.
Yeah, I guess, you know, one thing I want to ask you, though, about is what the Nate Solder contract that the Giants paid out, 2 years, $38 million guaranteed or something like that. I mean, do you think the Browns, if they had been serious about trying to sign him, could have outbid the Giants for him if they wanted to?
Yeah, but also, who's to say that they didn't?
They have a lot of cap space, and they just lost Joe Thomas, and they don't really have a replacement left tackle. And it's like, I was surprised that they didn't try to make a stronger bid, at least as far as I know they didn't try to make a stronger bid.
Right.
You know, so I'm a little curious about why they didn't, because with all that cap space, they had plenty of money to do it.
Right, but also remember, it's free agency, and what if they did make that same offer, and he didn't want to become a Brown?
Well, that's sure, and maybe that's what happened. I don't know. But they could have offered more than the Giants. I'm just curious if do you think Solder went to the highest bidder, or do you think he just had who he was interested in?
I think Solder made a choice because remember, a lot of that had to do with his son because they wanted to. You know, his son has some issues, and so I think that he would prefer to go to New York, and I think that played into it too. Yeah, I think it's something with his son has some kind of a thing that he has to go to New York a bunch. And so I think that played a lot into it too, but obviously the money. But my guess is, I mean, he would prefer going to the Giants than the Browns because again, how good are the Browns going to be? I think they're better, but they're still not there yet.
No, but I guess my concern, the larger concern with the Browns, is that they've had all this cap space for the last few years, and it's been an utter disaster, obviously. And I'm just not sure the owner is serious about winning when he's sort of hoarding all this cap space.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been spending. You know, I mean, they spent $4 million for Terrence Mitchell, and, they've been out there trying to go get some things.
No,
I mean, they're paying $16 million for Jarvis Landry.
No, it's true, but they still have the most money under the cap this year. They had most last year by far, them and the Niners, you know, and they had the most cap space the year before, and yet, you had an utter disaster, obviously, with their performance. So it just makes me wonder if the owner, how serious the owner really is. I mean, it wouldn't take that much to spend on some free agents, a few more free agents last year to avert an 0-16 season, and yet he didn't do it. And the writing was on the wall by midseason. They made no trades to upgrade the roster or anything to avoid that. And so,
I think you have to say that the analytics crew was clueless, right? You'd have to admit that, right?
For sure. Yeah. No, I think so.
That's on the owner for bringing that group in there.
No question. Yeah. I guess the last thing is
they didn't spend because they think they didn't know what to do.
Maybe. You know, Deion Sanders came out this week and said he thought that the Browns draft a quarterback, the quarterback should pull with Eli Manning and refuse to play for them. And I just, that was kind of a curious comment. I mean, I wonder if he, the state of the Browns is so bad and that sort of internally in the NFL, it's still viewed as a really bad place to go play, even with Dorsey's being hired as the general manager and some of the ex-Packers brought into the front office and so forth, that is still a very negative sort of, look for the Browns. So,
How can there not be? They've won one game in 2 years.
I know. Believe me. It's been bad.
Yeah, no, it's better. It's just like it's going to take a lot of time.
It's going to take time. No question about it. Well, I hope they get, like I said, I prefer Rosen, but Darnold I'd be happy with. I'm not sure Allen or Mayfield are the long-term answers, but we'll see that's what they do.
Well, at least you know they're getting a quarterback. Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you, John. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to John in Ballard. Hey, John.
Hey, Professor. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Let me ask your opinion on this. Do you think the Colts would be interested in Earl Thomas?
No. No, they drafted him. Remember, their first-round pick was Malise Hooker, who was a free safety.
Okay.
I think it's really just down to Dallas more so than anything else because there's most teams have a good free safety or at least a free safety they're comfortable with. But no, I can't see any chance of that because Hooker's their free safety.
Well, do you believe Schneider would take a second and a third round pick from Dallas in exchange for Earl Thomas, or do you think he's adamant about that first round pick?
Debatable. I would have to think that they may have to settle to take a second and third round pick. I think so much of it comes. I mean, again, I think if they get a second and third, I think that would definitely be one they would take because it fills the one void and it gives them a good player at 18. And they can still trade down if they want. But at the moment, I mean, how do you fill the void at 2 and 3? Is it going to be trading down from 18 or taking Earl Thomas? And the preference is to get a 1 and something else. I just think that's going to be not going to happen because again, that's where the Cowboys are the unfortunate team because they're sitting in the same spot as Seattle, one spot down, and they know that they can get a good player.
Right. Well,
the cutoffs at about, most teams have like a 16 first round picks or so, but of course with four quarterbacks, other teams aren't going to grade the quarterbacks. It's going to be a little bit different in that regard, but I think that it's one where they've just got to kind of watch out and get that. But I think that I get the growing chances, I think, of Earl Thomas being traded or there. And again, it may not be for that. I guess it's hard to get that first-round pick.
Right. Well, if they could get a 2 and a 3, hypothetically, John, from Dallas. And
it's worth it, I think.
And then trade their first-round pick and acquire more picks in exchange for the first-round pick, then that might give them maybe 4 or 5 picks.
Yeah, but the idea is getting quality. It's like it's nice to get all the. Hey, let's put it this way: we just talked to Paul, and he's talking about the Browns. What did the Browns do? They acquired a whole bunch of picks. Did that work? No.
Well, They have to rebuild in some extent. They got to still get a couple more offensive linemen, and like to see them get a couple defensive ends, as you mentioned. Maybe they can get Vinny Curry if he's a possible.
Vinny Curry, I think, would be a good candidate to get. I agree.
And I don't want to see them spend $10 million or more for Sua. Now, if they can get Sua for $8 million or $9 million, I'd be all for that. Because I don't think the Rams are that much better than Seattle. Maybe I'm smoking something, but I think Seattle can still compete in this division as long as they get players.
Yep, no, that I agree. I mean, this isn't a four-win team here. Remember, it has a quarterback. And when you have a quarterback, you have so much. And so, it's still good. It's just now we'll see what direction it's going to be to get better.
And I've got my fingers crossed, John, that they can get the players that they have a draft like they had back in 2011 or 2012, accumulating, finding those gems, those diamonds in the rough. And have you heard any talk about possibly bringing back McLuhan back?
Oh, no, he's in Cleveland. He took a job with John Dorsey in Cleveland.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so he's already off the market.
Okay.
That's one they cannot do.
Hopefully Schneider can find these guys and the next Cams, the next Richards, and we'll see what transpires. But yeah, have a great day.
Hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, chat with Doug Farrar of Bleacher Report. Lots of football talk coming up. It's the John Clayton Show on 710. ESPN Seattle.